You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to the Cooligans Women's World Cup Daily. I'm Christian Polanco, and I'm absolutely thrilled to have this guest next to me, of course, of the Levitard family, okay? And I think it's one of the few people on Levitard show that is a true Cooligan supporter, okay? And not a complete soccer hater that is trying to bring us down. So we appreciate the love. Everybody, big round of applause for Jessica Smetana, everybody. Jess, what's good?
Christian, if I were in the studio when you and Alexis came on the Levitard show last week and Dan told you that you talk too much, I would have yelled at him. I would have supported both of you. I cringed when I listened back to that segment. I felt terribly for how that went. You had so many good points that you were making about the U.S. women's national team crashing out in the round of 16, and it was met with Christian talks too much and did the U.S. choke.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Look, it's a thing that I'm learning very quickly that, you know, even though Metal Arc Media hired us to talk about soccer, the whole point is we don't like that you're talking about soccer so much.
Exactly. Pick a real sport, Christian.
So look, it's gonna the job is inherently hostile, you know.
Yes.
But I'm completely up for it because that's you know, that's the business that we are in, convincing people that this is a fun sport to be a gas bag about. So I'm learning.
Exactly. It's the funnest sport to be a gas bag about, as we saw all of the hot takes from people that have tuned in to watch U.S. women's team play for the first time in 4 years and come away with it with some very strange opinions and things that I had never considered or thought about before.
So we're having an absolute blast. The Women's World Cup has been awesome. Obviously, the time zone is probably the biggest challenge, but it's been entertaining nonetheless. But let's get right into it, because Spain did play against Sweden this morning, 4 a.m. Eastern time. I was up tuning in, and what a game. I mean, it was mostly what a game in the sense that how did I wake up this early for this terrible of a match? And then it became, and this is how the sport is sometimes, where it's just like, oh my God, this is now one of the most memorable matches I've ever seen at a Women's World Cup. But Spain ended up winning 2-1 when, you know, I thought we were going to go to extra time, which would have been a nightmare. Yeah. But three goals in the last, like, you know, I guess 12 minutes of the game. But what was your feeling? How did you take in this game? Because it was quite a wild one.
Well, I mean, U.S. fans versus time zones has definitely been the toughest matchup of this World Cup so far. I watched a replay as soon as I got up this morning. So luckily, I was not suffering through that first half at 4 a.m. But I thought the game really changed when Salma Paruelo came in for Alexia Putellas. She looked like she was playing a different game than everyone else on the field and immediately made an impact when she scored in the second half there. And this has been really shocking because earlier in the tournament, Spain lost 4-0 against Japan, and now they're in the final. And I can't imagine a bigger swing of emotions than Japan immediately becoming the favorite to win this tournament after that game to now being knocked out. And now the team that knocked them out has also been knocked out. It's like kind of mind-boggling.
It's kind of a shock. I mean, I guess we don't necessarily see this in these tournaments where it's sort of like a tale of two teams or two Spains, you know, where like you can get humiliated to that degree where, you know, we were talking about it a whole bunch because Japan had like 4% possession and got four goals in that game.
Yeah.
And it looked like Spain didn't know how to handle a counterattacking team to now kind of playing their game, right? Which is possess the ball. I mean, I don't even know what the possession was. This was 63% possession to 37. And this is what you're used to seeing. Just holding on to the ball. Never getting a shot on target, you know, that's not the priority. We're out here to play beautiful football.
But a couple really close ones. Like Redondo's shot was just barely off target.
That
should have been the first goal.
And
it seemed like if she knew that the deflection was gonna come towards her, like if she had just gotten up a little bit quicker, she would have had a really good angle, right, just to sneak it past the keeper. But unfortunately, she didn't, and it went out barely by like a foot.
I was surprised. I was surprised that there weren't that many shots, but I was also, I thought Sweden, especially towards later in the first half, they were, I would say, athletically faster and stronger than Spain. Mm-hmm. But Spain is just, everyone is so good on the ball that you really can't put a body on anybody. But anytime Sweden, you can tell there were a couple times where they shoulder to shoulder really knocked a girl off the ball.
Oh yeah. And they were super physical, but also to their detriment, because then at the end, when they needed another goal to tie it back up, I thought they looked a little like they were overly physical. They kept getting fouls called on them. And we know that they're so good off set pieces, but when the ball's constantly being called for a foul and going the opposite direction, like you're not going to be able to get those opportunities.
Yeah. I thought they were going to, I don't know, try to use that to their advantage a little bit more. But yeah, the ref was just like, all right, y'all need to chill a little bit, all right? Because there have been, it was impressive from Spain because they simply, again, the possession, this happens in a lot of matches where it's just like, it frustrates opponents so much. We're just like, are we really never going to get the ball? Like, how is everyone freaking Iniesta here? That why is everyone so good on the ball? But that was the scary thing, that just Spain couldn't find any real chances in the final third. But the overall story, just such a huge win for Spain. This is the first time that they obviously make it to the final. They are also, I believe, they are the youngest team on average to make it into a World Cup final. You see right here, it says the average age is 25.3. And then you think about the U.S. team, I think the average age was like 20, almost 29. It was like 28 point something. And then you're like, all right, are we that old? We didn't seem that old, right? We had a lot of young players. So clearly it's a factor. But the interesting thing here with Spain is we haven't had a chance to talk about it on the show yet, but Spain had a lot of issues with their federation, with their coach. There was a protest up until like early this year, where a lot of the players basically threatened to not even go to this World Cup or not play for Spain again. They rejected call-ups, and it was a really big fight between the federation and the players. And really the main thing was because of their coach, Jorge Vilda. They are not fans of him. They have made it very clear they don't want him as the coach. Even at this World Cup, there have been press conferences where the players have just been like, nothing has changed. We are not happy with the federation. And it's a very contentious relationship with their coach, but they're still doing it. They're still succeeding in spite of having the issues with the coach. And just to like help frame this a little bit, the main complaint with the coach has been, I've heard that he's just incredibly strict. And then the one detail that seems very, very odd is that he doesn't allow the players to close their hotel room doors when they're on like road trips and stuff. Which sounds
so weird.
It's uncomfortable even saying that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that specific complaint, but I had heard that they were upset with like a lack of professionalism, just in general, from the federation and having to take bus rides instead of flights to games and things like that. Like the same type of treatment that the U.S. Women's National Team had complained about in years past, where like, we're not getting the facilities that we need to actually be a successful team, and we're not happy with it. But they were specifically angry at him, although the players claimed that they never called for him to get fired. But The Federation said that they did. So there's just like a lot of animosity. Some players have like made nice and ended up playing for the team despite being part of the letter that was sent to the Federation. So there's like everyone kind of has a different like a different say in the matter, which right. doesn't, you know, sound like a great thing to build team chemistry if everyone is mad or hasn't had their issue resolved yet, or is mad that there are some really good players that stayed home from this World Cup that should have been on the roster. It's very bizarre. I actually heard, I think it was on Meg Linehan's podcast, she was like, is this just what happens when there's a common enemy and everyone hates the coach? You can come together and play really well in spite of him. And I thought that that was a funny point, because I mean, in spite of all of this, they are now in the World Cup final. They're going to play their England or Australia on Sunday morning.
Yeah, in these scenarios, I think most people probably side with the players, and I think that makes the most sense. And it's an interesting thing. You should. There's a clip. I had heard like a lot of the details on recap, Kristen Press and Tobin Heath's podcast, and there's a clip that Kristen Press posted on her Instagram talking about the Spanish national team and the issues that they were going through. And Alexia Putellas in the comments is like, you know, fire emojis and all the details. So right. I'm like, I think, why was she? She's at the World Cup watching this on Instagram, seeing other people talk about the struggles that they're going through. And she's like, all right, yeah, you know, bullseye emoji. You got it, right. sis, you know? So it feels like it's probably pretty accurate with, you know, with the issues yeah. with their coach.
And it's totally crazy. Like, I have seen a few, I think, like, misleading comments about the situation that take the Federation and the coach's side on it. And I think that if you are a fan of women's soccer at anywhere in the world, like, I would be really hesitant to side with a Federation or a coach, knowing how... You know, just because it's not, I'm not saying like you're guilty by association, but yeah. we've seen so many other teams, whether on the club level or the international level, have issues with coaches or with their federation not treating them with respect, that I think you should definitely listen when a group of players is writing a letter and put it, being willing to sit out of a World Cup. It is a once every 4 year yeah, opportunity. Yeah. Like, obviously things have to be pretty bad for you to be okay with sitting at home, or maybe not even okay with it. Some of them that are at home are not happy about it and have given quotes being like, this is not what we wanted, by the way. Like, we're not cool with yeah. this. This is like heartbreaking for us. It's not an opportunity you get every year. And I mean, it's to be pretty bad for them to be like yeah. able to do that.
And it's weird. There's so much, there's overwhelming evidence that this is probably happening, or just in general across different federations all over the world. To defend it in any real way is a little sus, in my opinion. It was interesting watching on Fox Sports, because the Alexi, you know, who's you know, I mean, this is his Super Bowl, bro. Yeah, as right. far as the hot take machine, he's been getting obviously very, very criticized. But this is the opportunity. You know. I mean, I don't know if it's completely intentional. I don't even know if it's totally like ignorant per se. Maybe he truly just believes this stuff. But the he had mentioned on the broadcast that you know, he mentioned the coach, and that you know, the team was winning in spite of all the issues. But he sort of said it like the players have all these issues with the coach, but look at what he's done getting them to the final. And it's like, I don't know if it's all that. I mean, the players have been very, you know, upfront that they are really not yeah. happy.
And maybe he hasn't made the best decisions too. I don't know if you can give him a ton of credit, especially in this game when, like, clearly, like, Alexia Putellas is coming back from a really, really yeah. tough injury. She hasn't been able to play a full game in over a year. And you could tell, like, she hasn't been herself. She's one of the best players in the world. She has not looked like herself. And as soon as she came out, Spain was back on the attack and able to win the game. And I don't, like, that's a decision that I think you have to look at the coach and be like, why did you put her in to start the game? And yeah. what made you think that she was ready to go out there? She was clearly not playing as well as she should, or as well as she usually is.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting point, because Parayuelo, the last two games have really been the difference.
She's so good. And she's 19. So good. Like, she is the future of the squad for sure.
Right.
And I think Bon Mati is playing better in midfield too, when she's kind of by herself, able to create chances.
Right. I mean, there was a tweet that you had mentioned from Chris Falica, the bear who we've seen on the Fox broadcast, and he's the is betting with the bear. So I've seen that, and he wrote this tweet. It's just kind of a strange one, and he just says, "Kudos to Spain for basically saying, quote, you don't want to play for this coach, fine, don't play, we aren't getting rid of him, and then bringing in a bunch of new players and reaching the final." Which is not really accurate. They did not bring a bunch of new players that, you know, like scabs that
are... Right. I just don't think, like, I loved the bear on College Game Day, all right? Like, we follow each other on Twitter, but I don't think that I would ever be like, credit to the Spanish Federation, knowing what's happened the last year. I personally would not.
Yeah. It's giving very, like, you know, we're with the studios, SAG-AFTRA, they need to figure out, they're asking for too much, you know?
Bring in new people that aren't going to complain and whine. And it's like, well, maybe you should listen to what they're complaining about. Maybe there's something to it.
I just love Jeff Bezos' business model. He's just a good guy. I don't know what to tell you. So it's very, very wild. But it's still a huge story for Spain. And we'll talk about not only, you know, giving Spain their flowers, but we have to talk about Sweden in a little bit. Because the one suggestion I would always make to any team that loses in any World Cup, it's obviously disappointing. But the best way to handle it is just chill with an ice cold Coors Light, Smetty. That is the move. Sweden's gonna need it more than ever, and they can also do that while watching League's Cup, because Lionel Messi is playing tonight. I'm sure they'll find it very entertaining. It's very therapeutic to watch this man play, especially after losing a World Cup. It's I say that out loud. No idea if it's helpful, but I'm gonna keep suggesting it. But you've been watching? I'm sure. I mean, look, Miami has completely changed because of Lionel Messi. What's the experience there like?
Here's my thing. I'm zigging while everyone's zagging. Tonight, everyone in Miami is going to be watching the Inter-Miami game. I'm going to be at the Marlins game, where tickets are going for as much as $5. So I'll have to listen to this show later this week and see what happens.
Okay, that's great. Look at that. You know, Messi, I never heard of the guy. What's all this ruckus?
The thing about Messi is that I'm not getting on I-95 ever after a work day during rush hour to drive to Fort Lauderdale and watch an Inter-Miami game. When they build a stadium down here, I'll go.
Okay, perfect. Well, look, that's why we all have Apple TV and I'm watching an MLS season pass, all right? So this summer, stay passionate and stay refreshed with an ice-cold Coors Light, official beer of League's Cup 2023. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Cooligans. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Let's go. Well done, Smetty. Look at this. Doing the ad reads. It's teamwork, all right?
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.
All right, let's talk about Sweden, because they lose again in a semifinal. And this is basically what we're used to seeing. I mean, they obviously losing to Spain 2-1. They lost in 2019 1-0 to Netherlands. Netherlands obviously went and played in the final and lost to the U.S. 2011, they lose to Japan. In 2003, they lose to Canada. And in 1991, they lose to Norway. So not a great history in semifinals. What do you think went wrong for Sweden in this game?
Oh my gosh. I will also want to mention they've been the runners up in the last two Olympics. They have not been able to clinch an Olympic gold medal despite being really, really close the last couple times. But what went wrong for Spain? I mean, or for Sweden, I should say. I just thought that, like, they were not, like you said, they were not able to possess the ball. I think the thing that they've been really good at, again, is the set pieces and using their height to their advantage and being able to, like, out-physical players in the box. And they had a couple of those opportunities, but were really not able to get anything meaningful. And their midfield just was not as strong as you would hope that they'd play in a semifinal game. And I thought Spain kind of just played around them, and they were able, Spain just plays their game. Like they stayed calm and they got their chances when they came, but I don't think Sweden had much of an answer for them offensively.
Yeah. The, I mean, I couldn't believe they scored, and in the way that they did, right? to tie the game.
True.
They were just really, you know, no chances for both yeah. teams in this game. And then to, you know, to score the goal that they scored, this always happens in soccer, where as soon as you score, something in your brain shuts yes. off on like exactly how to defend. You forget what your position originally was. And,
yeah,
and,
well, and Spain beat them at their own game because the corner kick, it was like just an amazing play. But also no one from Sweden was defending Carmona, who's yeah. you know, plays left back but comes up and attacks a lot. She got the ball at the top of the box and took an amazing shot. Probably should have been saved. I don't know, you know, yeah, Sweden's keepers had a really good tournament, so yeah, I'll give her credit. Like, I think she knows what she's doing generally. She's pretty good. But yeah, it was a tough one to defend, or tough one to save, but not, you know, you have to have a defender on her. She's wide open.
Yeah, it's I would kind of chalk it up to maybe like tired legs and like not I think there's also a little bit of like, ain't no way she's shooting this. And if she does, there's no way she's scoring it. I mean, they're not that much better than us. And that's exactly what Carmona ended up doing. On the Sweden goal, it was I forgot her name. The Hudiger? I forgot her name.
Hertig. Yeah.
She, who's you know, the player that scored the winning penalty against the U.S. and really just a tremendous contribution in getting on the end of that ball and just heading it perfectly, and the placement just, I mean, she might as well have been taking a penalty. I mean, she was just a great spot and an incredible finish. And Hertig got the header, I was like, how is there not a Spanish defender there? It just like really made no sense. But it was impressive that the goal from Spain came, 2 minutes later. And it didn't seem to affect Spain that much. I mean, or sort of what happened to Spain after they scored, which they shut off. Sweden shut off immediately right after that, and it's so just so surprising. I mean, like, given how kind of odd the game was, and a lot of these knockout games, this sort of tends to happen where like no one wants to lose, so everybody plays a little bit cautious and stuff like that. But those last 10 minutes were just. It's sort of hard to explain if you have to tell somebody who didn't watch the game. Like,
exactly. Because it didn't feel like a game where anything was like building towards that, right? Like, I felt like when I watched Colombia and England play, like the last 30 minutes were building towards a goal. And it never really came for Colombia, but like you could feel that they were pressuring, they were super intense. And this game felt very much like it was played like in between the two attacking thirds. And Spain ended up with two better chances and scored on them, and that was the difference.
Totally. And now, so we know that Spain is going to be in the final. They will obviously face England or Australia. Who do you think gets to the final, if we give an early prediction?
I mean, I think no matter who I pick, they will lose, because I've been the World Cup jinx. Every team that I've decided to jump on the bandwagon for has lost their next game. So I want Australia to win, but I think England will win, because I think England has just continued to find ways to win. Every single time that I think they're out, they pull me back in. They are like, they just know how to finish and they know how to win games.
Yeah. I do think, with how well Australia has been playing, and they've made every team that they've played against kind of like just really have a tough time. Kennedy, their center back, like they're just defensively, that's why I like very, very impressed by. They're a pretty well balanced team. So I think Australia can win, and I don't think it would be that shocking. I mean, they're not going to win 2-3-0 or anything like that, but I think this goes to penalties. Like the other game, and it'll be.
Oh God, I don't know if I can handle another. France Australia penalties were crazy. They were showing a like condensed recap of the PKs before the Spain-Sweden game, and they cut out the last six penalties because that's how long the PKs lasted. They were like 20 PKs, and they were just like, each team scored three. Fast forward to the end when you know someone's about to miss one because they just fast forward through half of them.
There was a condensed, like maybe 60-second one that was posted on Twitter, and it was the most penalties ever taken in a World Cup.
Yeah.
But if you watch it condensed, all you hear is the shots, the ball going into the net, or the ball being stopped or hitting the post, and the crowd cheering. And it's like, I called it penalty ASMR. If you only hear, it's just, and it's just like, it's like soothing for some reason. It was really, really cool.
It was cool. Mackenzie Arnold was great. And apparently you can't even buy her jersey because Nike didn't put the keeper jerseys for sale, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, man, that's a
missed opportunity. Issue. You guys are losing money on that.
Everybody, yeah, they're fumbling the bag hard. I do want to get your take, and we'll wrap up here on the U.S. Obviously, we haven't spoken about this stuff, but the U.S. Getting knocked out. I mean, you know, we when we were on Lebatard Show, you were not there to get your reaction. But the look, it's obviously very frustrating. But what do you think of how it all went down?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely wasting all their time being activists, and that's why they lost to Sweden. I don't know. I mean, it's been so frustrating because I do agree that I think this is a necessary wake up call that they need to like really look deep, whether the Federation will or won't. They really need to look deep and figure out like, how are we developing players? How are we giving these players the best chances to play well together, to win together? Who is managing these players, et cetera? But I also think that like, they still are really good, and a couple of things could have gone differently in this tournament and they would be playing in the semifinals. So yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure what they're going to be able to fix in time for the Olympics next year, but I am still optimistic that with the talent that this team has and the young players, especially the young players that missed this tournament because of, you know, injury, they're still one of the top teams in the world, and they just need to be able to put the puzzle pieces together, which is obviously the hard part. But I'm not as pessimistic as I think a lot of folks are, but maybe that's just because I'm stupid. So we'll see.
I'm
proven right.
One of the changes they are definitely going to make by the next Olympics is a new coach.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way.
No doubt. Yeah.
Vlatko stays. And yeah, I mean, look, I've talked about this ad nauseum. It's just, to me, it was a great team and poor coaching. And, you know, again, the lack of substitutions, the lack of players that we just never got to see. You know, I've been talking to all different people involved in women's soccer, and everybody kind of has the same opinion, or at least, like, you know, really can't make sense of the tactical kind of decisions.
Yeah.
But I think it will change. The main thing that's frustrating is the comment sections have been absolute nightmare. And it, like, the thing I've been getting a lot, and what we see, is a lot of like, you know, Rapinoe ruined this team, or people calling Rapinoe a man for whatever, like,
oh,
it's just,
God.
It's
yeah,
constant. It's, and it's like, Rapinoe ruined this team. And it's like, what about the other two World Cups? Did she ruin the team then?
She's on the Mount Rushmore of soccer players from the United States, men's or women's. She's been more successful in winning than any men's U.S. player ever in history, and most women's players. So I think that is just such an example of like what I was saying before, just like the casuals who are tuning in just to be haters every 4 years, like they've been waiting for this moment. They pounced on it. Like, they have been waiting, and they're like, here, they're like, all right,
yeah,
let's go.
They talk like, you know, I've been following this team since 99. How dare she? I'm just like, no, you haven't, because she's literally been one of the most successful players.
Name one NWSL team. Like, please, I can't even.
It's so surreal. It's only, at least for me, it's only energized me. You know, we obviously talk women's soccer on this show pretty often, but we've never done it every single day for a month. And I don't know, at least for me, it's sort of changed something in me where I'm like, okay, you're upset that we're talking about this? We're going to talk about this more. Because it really feels like I've said this before, but when you talk about women's soccer as a man, on the internet, you start feeling like a woman on the internet who gets
shouted at all the time. And you're like, I didn't even say anything that controversial. But that's the thing. It's not that like, oh, these people are mad that the U.S. women's national team lost. These people are mad that women play soccer fundamentally and that they exist and probably make more money than a lot of the people sitting at home complaining about it. And that's the issue. And that's why I'm like, I don't want to let those weirdos like, you know, muddy the waters and control the narrative around this team, because I still think this team can do a lot of great things together, but I do think they need new leadership.
Well said, well said. All right. Smedi, thank you so much for joining me. Seriously, appreciate it very much. Is there anything you want to let people know, anything you want to plug, let people know where they can get the best soccer coverage on Levitard Show?
Yeah, well, definitely not on the Levitard Show, but you should tune into that. I also have a podcast with Mike Golick. That's part of DraftKings, Golick and Smedi. We have Rosie White from the New Zealand, formerly from the New Zealand national team. She played at UCLA also and played in the NWSL. She's on this week, so check that out if you want to hear more.
Rosie's great. Rosie did the first episode of Women's World Cup, and Rosie's the best. Yeah, we actually did a live show when she was with the Chicago Red Stars. We did a live stand-up show, and she joined us on stage. And a couple, Danny Colaprico as well, who used to play for the Red Stars and now plays in San Diego. But Rosie was great. Seeing soccer players at a comedy club and like actually like show their personality and be funny, it's literally the best. And Danny and Rosie were awesome. So go check Rosie White on Smedi and Golick Show. Smedi, thank you so much. Y'all the absolute best. Keep crushing it. Thank you so much. Everybody, make sure you subscribe to the show at Soccer Coolians on all channels. Subscribe on YouTube, the podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify. Leave a review if you haven't yet. And we'll be back tomorrow. I got another fun show planned that we'll be reacting, obviously, to the England and Australia match, which should be a wild one. So we're almost up. I mean, this is wild. We've been here every single day for the World Cup and just a couple more days left. So to everybody, shout out to everybody for continuing to join us. A lot of people have been really, really supportive, so we appreciate it. All right. For Smedi and myself, thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.